We're in the middle here of Perek Hay of the Netzach Yisrael. We've been learning the Agadata of Churban, the Agadata of Tisha B'Av, the Sugi of Kamtzu Bar Kamtzu. Here in the Netzach Yisrael, where he's discussing the Churbanais and the Goliais of the Bnei Yisrael, so this Perek is a very, very lengthy Perek, with an aside, going through methodically the Agadais HaChurban, the discussions of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And where we're up to in the story, last time we spent our time talking about the specific aspect of the story of the Balmum, the Korban Balmum, that Bar Kamtza set up this whole thing to make the Romans feel that the Jewish people were rejecting them. And we talked about the idea of the control of the spirituality of the world that was being managed by the Jewish people, something which was akin to the issues of Cain and Hevel we talked about last time, and how that fit into the whole story here, and we tied it back a little bit to the original issue of being mavayish, of humiliating, which also was tied into that. Now what we're up to here, the next stage in the Gemara was Shadar Iluyayu LeNiron Kesar. So he called Nero, right, and was coming in to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara tells a number of aspects of the story, some of which the Maral is going to deal with, and some of which he deals with, and we're going to deal with quickly. Right, the Gemara tells the story about Niron Kesar, Kikosi Shadagir LeMizrach, Asa Nafal B'Yushalayim, Marav Asa Nafal B'Yushalayim, Abaruchas Hashemayim Asa Nafal B'Yushalayim. He sent arrows, he shot off arrows in all directions, and they all came to fall in the direction of Yerushalayim. Which, as the Maral explains, the idea was simply, right, this was their way of trying to be menachesh, of trying to be able to tell, and there seemed to be no aspect of protection for Yerushalayim, from no direction, each direction symbolizing some aspect, some kayach. The Jewish people seem to have protection arriving at them from no direction. So the Gemara goes on, and it says, so what we're going to focus on today more than anything else is going to be the siege of Yerushalayim, which the Gemara discusses here at length. Right? Shadre alayu laspasianus kesar Nero, who in doing this and saw what was happening, and he heard that this was doing what was Hashem's plan for the Beis HaMikdash to destroy, he was not comfortable in the position, and in fact it says he went and he was Megayer, he went and he converted, he thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to bring the Churban and then, you know, sort of pass it off onto him. He knew that he was involved in a divine plan. And so, even as it was for the destruction of the Jewish people, he decided that he would rather join them. So instead, he sent Aspasianus, Vespasian. Also, Tsarle plus Shni. He came and he laid siege to them for 3 years. Havu Bahanu Klase Asire. And there were three wealthy men that were there in Yerushalayim. Magdimon Ben Gurion, Uven Kalva Savua, Uven Tzitzis HaKeses. Three great people, three wealthy people. Magdimon Ben Gurion, why did he get a name like that? Magdimon. Shenokto Lochama Ba'avuro. Because the sun shone because of him. The sun shone brightly because of him. What does that mean? The Gemara in Tanis tells a fascinating story of Nagdimon Ben Gurion, where there was an issue of providing water, and he had to buy water, borrow water, otherwise he was mechayev himself. He obligated himself with a tremendous amount of money, and it had to be replenished. It had to be paid back by a certain time, and the time was marching on, and the time didn't come, and finally, you know, as a result of his prayers, the rain came, and the person argued that it wasn't the last minute, it was past the last minute, because the sun had already set, and miraculously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the sun shine through to vindicate Magdimon, that it was really just dark because it was a cloudy day, not the end of a cloudy day, not because the time was up, and so he was saved. So it's a dramatic story through which Nagdimon Ben Gurion is remembered. Ben Kalba Savua, why was he called Ben Kalba Savua? Right, famously, he was the father-in-law of Rabbi Akiva. Shekola nichnas lebeisok shu roiv kekelev yetek shu saveah. Right? When Kalba Savua was because anybody who would enter his home hungry like a dog would leave, Savua would leave satisfied. So the anybody who would come to his house hungry like a dog, Kalba would leave Savua, would leave full, would leave satisfied. And the third one was Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, the child of Tzitzis HaKeses. What does that mean? What was the significance of that name? Shehaisa Tzitzasai, his tzitzis, or his tassels, were nigreres, would drag al gabe ksasais, on top of ksasais, coverings. In other words, wherever he walked, there was a red carpet. So when the tails of his garment, the tzitzis of his garment, would never schlep on the ground, they would always be on some kind of a carpet, some kind of a surface, a sign of wealth. Igadi Amri, another alternative is Shahisa Kisase Mutelas Ben Gedele Raimi, that his chair sat amongst the Gedelim, amongst the leaders of Rome. He was a recognized, important person amongst the Goyim as well. So says the Gemara, so you have these three great people in Yerushalayim. Chad Amarlu, one said, Ana Zaini Lu Bechiti Usari. One said, I'll be able to supply the people here in Yerushalayim during the siege with wheat and with barley. V'chad Omar, and one of them said, V'dechamru v'demilcha, I'll be able to provide wine and milcha and salt uv'mishcha and oil. V'chad Omar, and the other one said, V'detzivi, I'll provide the wood. V'shavchu Rabbanon l'detzivi, and the Rabbanon were most salutary of the one who said with wood. Why? Rav Chisda kol iklidi avimaser l'shamei bar midetzivi. Rav Chisda used to give over all of his keys to his assistants, with the exception of the key of the wood storage. Why? D'amar Rav Chisda, akalba d'chiti bo ishisin akalba d'tzivi. One storehouse, one lock, so to speak, of wheat requires 60 of wood. In other words, you need a lot of wood to fuel your ovens in order to bake your breads. So proportionally, it's what you need the most of. It's the most generally necessary. So that's why they considered the wood the best. Havilu lemezin ezrin v'chad shasa. They had enough to supply the city for 21 years. And havabu hanu bar yoini, but there were bar yoinim there. Amru luhu, rabbona nefuk v'navit shalma b'hadayu. So the Rabbanan said, you know, why don't we go and somehow negotiate, make peace with the Romans? Loi shavkinu. So the Bar Yoinim did not let them. Amru l'nefuk v'navid karva badai. The Bar Yoinim wanted to fight them. Let's go and fight the Romans. Amru Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said to them, Lei mistayam ilsi, you won't be successful. So there was this argument. Should we negotiate or should we fight? Should we negotiate and should we fight? So the Rabbanan, right, who weren't being allowed to make peace, but nevertheless were opposed to making war, they were going to just sit there. But the other ones wanted to fight. So what did they do? So they went and they took all these storehouses of these wealthy people and they sent them up in smoke. They burnt them. So in other words, they wanted to force the issue. They wanted to force a confrontation. Vavu kafta. And there was a terrible, terrible famine. Okay, so that's the story, and the Gemara is going to go on with a story of Marta Bas Baitus, of the famine, which if we have a chance, we'll get to it later. But the issue over here, at this point in time, at this stage of the Gemara, is the description of the siege of Yerushalayim, the description of these three wealthy people who were somehow going to spare Kal Yisrael during this period of the siege of Yerushalayim and the various realms of wealth. And you know, wherever you're going to come with the number three, so you know the morale is going to have a party, right? There's always going to be something because the divisions in the world of threes are always going to be very significant. And we're going to try to look here a little bit at some of what he's going to analyze in the nuances here of this Haggadah. There are a couple of things that I would just want to mention that the morale says and not go into them at great length. And that is about the siege for 3 years, and that they had enough to support themselves for 21 years. So the Maharal speaks, first of all, he says, you know, that this is Yerushalayim, which is the headquarters of the Amat Lisa, right? The nation, the triple nation. I think we mentioned a few weeks ago, probably in context, would probably be 3 weeks ago, we have the Gemara that refers to Klal Yisrael as the triple nation, the Amat Lisoi. Why? Because we have Kohanim, Levim, and Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, which is Lisoi, the triple Torah, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim, right, in the third month, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. Right? So there's all these elements of the threes that come together, and we talked about it in a general sense before, the harmony which is created by the three. You have the two extremes and the third one in the middle, and that's what creates the greatest strength when you put the three of them together. Hachut hameshulash loibim heira yinotek. The triple rope does not easily break. Right? One alone, even two stand apart. The three merges and blends and brings together the strength from both sides. Three avos, right? In so many different realms. And so he says that here, in order to break, thank you very much, in order to break the back of Yerushalayim, the Romans had to have a siege that was going to be lasting for 3 years, because you're coming here against the three, and parenthetically, Yerushalayim itself is Tlisoi, because Yerushalayim contains within it the Migdash, which is the Machne Shechina, and the Har HaBayis, which is the Machne Leviya, the camp of the Leviim, and Yerushalayim as a whole is considered to be the Machne Yisrael, and that's where it ends, right? Corresponding to the desert where we had those three levels. That those three levels are inherent in Yerushalayim and in Yerushalayim alone. Outside of Yerushalayim is not even considered to be Machne Yisrael relative to the halachos that we have generally for that. So therefore, there's this three, and to have Yerushalayim fall, it has to be three. And the Maharal goes on and he says, and then you have the 21, right? They had enough to hold out for 21. So the Maharal connects this to the idea of the 3 weeks, which are composed of really 21 days, right? 3 times 7 is 21. Well, actually, Shivasar B'Tammuz is day 1, but after the 21 comes Tisha B'Av. And so he says that the idea was that we had enough to hold out for 21 days, but then would have come year 22, and we would have collapsed, just like you have over there in the context of the 3 weeks. So that's, you know, some of the things which he says, which he speaks about here in terms of this understanding the significance of this. One other thing which he says, which is very which again just in the numbers and in the aspect before we get into what he really is going to expound upon more, is I feel especially obliged to say in the context of this week's parsha. So there were three wealthy people, and together they would be able to support the community for 21 years. This one would provide X, this one would provide Y, and this one would provide Z. This one would provide the wheat, this one would provide the wine and oil, and this one, there's plenty of room around the table. Welcome. And this one would provide wood. So that's how they were able to do it. And that would supply the city for all of these years. So you would say, okay, this one supplied it for 21 years, this one supplied it for 21 years. So he says, no. The truth is that each one would be providing it for 7 years. Because, he says, the shear, really, of a famine is sheva shanim. Right? Like we have in the original famines. You know, here, the original famine of Pari and Mitzrayim was there was the sheva shnei rov that would be really covered by the sheva shnei hasava, by the 7 years of plenty, that would be able to support the people through the 7 years of famine, of deprivation. And really, when we speak about these three wealthy people that were going to be able to supply and to support the people for 21 years, it's because really each one of them represented one aspect of sova, one aspect of the plenty, which, by the way, is the same letters as sheva, as seven, right? It's all going to be the notion of fullness. And each one was going to add one piece. So these were the three stages of reinforcement, so to speak, the three times Sheva Shnei Asava, to be able to keep the Jewish people during what would have been 7 years times three of Rav imposed from the outside. Three cycles of full devastating famine imposed from the outside, but they had these reinforcements that was going to be able to hold them out. And whatever, there are other asides and elements that exist about that. So that's the framework here, so to speak, of the numbers game for these. But now let's look more at the details, which is also going to give you again just with this the three Ashire Yerushalayim, these three wealthy people of Yerushalayim, each one going to be able to provide for their own thing. Now, so the Maral explains as follows. He says that the three Chachamim, first of all, he's going to offer a few different levels of interpretation. These were three Ashirim. These were three people with wealth. And he says wealth really can take on three specific forms. Wealth can come in three specific forms in three specific ways. Where I'm reading, those of you who are following now or whatever, Tzadik Vav, page Tzadik Vav in the Hartman edition, the Ka'amar Shayabham Gimel Ashirim Dafka, in the other, is that it? Yeah, it's right on the bottom of Chav Zayin in the classic edition. Notice how I don't say the old edition. The Ka'amar Shayabham Gimel Ashirim Dafka. Veda, ki Ashirus Umitzad Gimel Dvarim. Wealth can be from three aspects. Ha'echad u'mitzad, birchas Hashem hita'ashir. The blessing of Hashem is what brings wealth. The blessing of Hashem is what brings wealth. Pasuk in Mishlei, proverb, v'um avayrach. So, mipnei shezocha lebracha meis Hashem, zeicha lo'esher mitzad ha'bracha bilvad. Because the person is somehow in the path of the bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem providing him with blessing. So that's why he has wealth. He has wealth just because of the open channel of connection, of bracha that the person has from Hashem. It's not necessarily utilitarian, or if it's for a specific goal or purpose, a practical specific thing. It's just, he's in the right place. He's mevorach. Remember when we spoke earlier about the three cities that were involved in the Churban of Klal Yisrael, so to speak, the Yerushalayim, the Migdash, and Tur Malka, and Beitar. Right, so Yerushalayim represented the bracha, represented the place of bracha, the channel through the Beis Hamikdash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just bracha itself, Tur Malka represented, you know, tremendous population. Beta represented what they were able to build up by themselves, but Yerushalayim represented, you know, the direct channel, Vavarechecha, right, the direct channel that came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's something about just being there. Accessing Birchas Hashem, that of course, okay, so Mamela, there's going to be wealth, because that's something which is brought down, which comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hasheni, the second, Shezeicha La'osher, Kedei Sheyishba, or Yushba, Umipnei HaParnasa Zeicha La'osher. The second one would be that it's already speaking more targeted, more purposeful, that the person has it because of some level of providing, filling a gap, filling a need which the person has. And yes, it's being filled with plenty. It's being filled with, you know, great, great, great measure. But the idea is that everybody has needs. People also have wants. And the more the person is given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more the person is going to be able to have. Okay, so the first one, again, I mean, there's some subtlety here. The first one, of course, the person ends up having, right? They're going to end up having because of the Eicher, because of the blessing which Hashem gives them. But the goal isn't because I want to provide you to make sure you have X, Y, and Z. The notion is, I just want to show this sort of connection of bracha. I just want, you know, because you're there connected to the Makar HaBracha, so therefore you're going to find yourself with bracha, halavai of everybody. This should apply. That's the notion of bracha for the sake of bracha. The second one is what you would probably have imagined the most conventional understanding of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give Aisha. He gives a person Aisha so they'll have things, right? Not just as a, not for the sake of bracha, not, but so that the person will have things and will have be able maybe have plenty of it. And the third, v'hashlishi, m'neku zeich l'aysher shiyeh choshuv b'shvil ha'aysher. Chashivosu b'ribuy ha'aysher. The third is not for the sake of bracha, not for the sake the person should have things, but the third is to raise the person's position, to give the person significance, to give the person standing and stature. And wealth is a path to doing that, is a way of doing that. I don't know if you've noticed. What's the idea? You know, there's a famous machloikes between, I don't know, I think it's famous, the machlokes is between the Ran and the Rambam on a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only Mashre Shechinosei, Hashem only gives His presence, no Nevuah, on a person who's a Chacham, on a person who's a Gibor, on a person who's an Asher. Elsewhere the Gemara says on a person who's a Baal Kaima, a person who's tall, and so on and so forth. So why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu only give His Shechinah on a person who's a Chacham and a Gibor and an Asher? Right? So if I told you this, just by itself, the Gemara, and I ended the Gemara there, so what would you say, anybody?
Respect.
Oh, okay, so you're the Ran. Okay, we'll go, the Rambam. The Rambam says that, oh, let's pull out the Pirkei Avos. Ezu Chacham, Halei Mimikol Adam. Ezu Gibor, Hakai Veshes Yitzray. Ezu Asher, Asameach Bechalkai. All of these Pirkei Avos type descriptions of what true wealth is, and what true strength is, and so on and so forth. So when the Rambam writes about Nevuah in Hilchos Yisaidei HaTaira, he quotes this Gemara in the context of saying that Nevuah will only come to a person who has been mashlim himself, who has developed and refined himself in all the midos. Chachma, it happens to be that he says, oh, it's not just the Chacham Aleim, it's not just the thirst for knowledge, but it means a person who's truly accomplished in wisdom. And that's part of the Rambam's general understanding, where he understands connection to Hashem as being very, very much through a channel of wisdom and, you know, philosophical, theological knowledge and understanding. But Gibor, Gibor means a person who's Kaivash Yitzray. Ashir means a person who's not, he doesn't feel needs, he feels like he has everything which he has, with awfully little. That's the way the Rambam plugs in the Gemara, that's why the Rambam seems to understand this Gemara. And, you know, to an Aristotelian, excuse me, you know, that would be what would make sense. You know, when you're thinking about the context, and a Baal Musar also, you know, thinking about the context of how should a person be able to develop a Shaychus to Hashem, it would be from, you know, somehow being a master of these things rather than being, you know, blessed with them in the material sense. There's one problem, huh?
Yesh Likol.
Yeah. There's one problem with it. Because if you read the Gemara, it's virtually impossible to say that that's what the Gemara means. Why? Because the Gemara says, okay, how do you know that Hashem only puts a Shekhinah on a Gibor? Says the Gemara, because the Luchos, that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Luchos were very, very heavy. The Gemara says the Krushim, you know, the putting up the Mishkan, the Gemara brings proof from very material things. Okay, well, you say, okay, well, that's pretty, you know, those are still spiritual matters that have to be. The Gemara says, how do you know it has to be an Ashir? Because it says, Yaina went down, he wanted to escape from Eretz Yisrael. So he went down to catch a boat, right? He wanted to run to Tarshish, so he went to catch a boat. So he came, it says, and he gave schara, he gave its payment, and it left. So Chazal say the idea was, in those days, right, Carnival Cruises did not have a website. They didn't even have an 800 number. Mm-hmm. You know, so people, what would happen? The boat would come into port, and people would show up. And when the boat would fill up, it would leave, right? But until it was filled, you know, it didn't go. They didn't, it wasn't like, you know, scheduled departure. Right, imagine, right, the ratings for the cruise ships in those days, how that was, right? But it would fill up and it would leave. Yoina needed to get out of there in a hurry, so he couldn't afford to wait. So what did he do, says the Pasuk? Say Chazal, he said, I'm paying for the whole boat. You have a full boat. Imagine you have a full boat. He paid for every berth, and they were able to therefore leave without incurring any kind of a loss. Says the Gemara, so therefore you see that he must have been an Ashir.
But the fact that he might be an Ashir, why is that necessarily a raya, that it's prerequisite that every...
So that's a fair issue in the Gemara. It's a kasha on the Gemara. Just because you see that he was wealthy, it doesn't mean that wealth is a prerequisite. But the Gemara says, we see he was an Ashir, and the Gemara is satisfied. You're asking a good question. But, you know, it sort of, to some degree, will depend on where the Gemara is starting from. Now, Right? So, you're saying this Gemara, you can be the most Sameach B'chelko person at all, but they're not going to give you a first class ticket for being Sameach B'chelko, right? You're not going to be able, okay, here, let us go. I'm Sameach B'chelki. You're Sameach, I'm not Sameach B'chelki. You know, so, they still want to see everything paid for. The Gemara is Kipshuto, is saying this. And, the Rambam knew the Gemara. I think that the idea that the Rambam is speaking about over there in Hilchos Yisrael HaTorah more than anything else is, first of all, a dual, there could be layers of meaning. And on one level, the Gemara is saying what it's saying, but the Rambam is talking in a certain practical sense about what you have to do to get there, right? And he's not going to say what you have to do is you have to play the market, right? Because that's really ultimately not going to get you. Yaina was probably not wealthy because he pursued it tremendously. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed him with wealth, just like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't work out in the gym, right, for 2 hours a day, and that's the way he became so muscular and strong. So the stuff to work on is the other stuff. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give him these things. The Ran, in the Drashes HaRan, says that the idea is, like you were saying, to command respect. The Navi is speaking on behalf of Hashem. The Navi's words need to be heard. And says the Ran, that to begin with, there is a reality that when some people speak, people listen, right? And that is when the person will command the material respect, when people will command the material respect, when people look at them, and according to what is seen, ha'adam yira lo'einayim, what a person sees with their eyes, they're already going to respect them. So that gives the person, to some degree, the opening to be able to do it. It's a very interesting Ran. I just add this for the sake because it's such an interesting thing. The Ran sort of plays both sides. He says, but then people might say, in a certain sense, that people will only listen because of, it really doesn't have importance. Says that's why Hashem made Moshe Rabbeinu a kvad peh. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu was a kvad peh, he had a difficulty speaking, so then everybody knew that it wasn't because he sweet-talked or fast-talked them into this, but that it was genuine, that the message spoke for itself. But at the same time, the entree needs something of a package, of someone whose message is going to command respect. And so we find halachas in the Gemara, that the Gemara says that the hakoyen hagodol me'echov, gadleil mishalechov, there was a responsibility on the community. When a person became the kohen gadol, they had to make him rich. Right? They did it even sometimes by the nasi, or by the avbezin. They had to make him wealthy. Why? Because, it's wonderful that he's a tzaddik and he's simple and he's never really, worried about building up his wealth. But Lamaisa, in his interactions with the world, he's taking this important position. He has to some degree look the part. So we find this, and it's a competing value, with the simplicity, which also is going to be a value. But this is what the Maharal is referring to over here. Sometimes the Aisher is not simply because he happens to be an object of Hashem's bracha, or because Hashem wants him to have all of these things. It's not that he wants him to have it. He wants him to have the ambiance, so to speak, or not the ambiance, but the aura. Perfect. That was the word I was looking for. He wants him to have the aura of a wealthy person. Very good. He wants him to have the aura of a wealthy person, so that he'll have that chashivas, he'll have that significance.
When Yisro advised Moshe point, Shoftim, Rashi says in Anshei Chayil that those are men of wealth, right? The
right.
first and the four
right.
characteristics.
Right. Right.
Where does the scheme of the Haftah
there, excuse me one second, there to some degree, it sounds like he didn't want him to be needy, because if they're poor, so then they may have this constant parnasa need, and they would be motivated by it and more vulnerable to bribes and things like that. Isn't that part of it? Isn't that what part of
the
language?
Fourth characteristic, though, were people
who hated
money,
right?
So that would be redundant if in the Anshei.
Okay, it could be. I'm not fresh, but it could be.
Where do you fit in the scheme of the Haftacha that Aser Taser, if you Rebbeinu Shlom challenges Klal Yisrael that if you're good gabayim, then he'll make you wealthy because you're doing the right thing with your money. Where does that fit?
Which kind of Aisher is that
yeah.
the person will have? I don't know that it's one as opposed to the other. I don't know that it's one as opposed to the other. If I would have my guess, I would think it would be somehow to some degree the first two. That first of all, you know, the person's it's varikaisi lachem bracha ad belidai, right? That's the language where we get it from. That if imlay aftach lachem, right? Habavios kol amasir es elbeis aitzer uchanuni na bazois imlay aftach lachem arubay hashemam varikaisi lachem bracha ad belidai, right? Go bring a meiser, give it, test me on this, right? If I won't open up the heavenly things and give you bracha. Until you'll just you'll say be saying enough already. So it's it's clearly an association with bracha. It's clearly an association with bracha. On the other hand, the ma'asir is giving people their needs. I mean that's the role. His path to Aisher is by providing the needs of others. So it seems maybe to connect to the two. But these are three specific goals, and he's quite affirmative about it. Ein inyan revi. There's no fourth pshat. There's no fourth aspect. It's one of these three things. And so explains the Maharal that these were the three kinds of Aisher which we found amongst these Ashirim. Right here he's continuing, you know, we're jumping ahead a little bit within the paragraph, and he says that this is the three kinds of Ashirim that we have over here. Page Sadi Zayin. Nakdimon ben Gurion shenot v'lachamu bavuro. The first one was Nakdimon ben Gurion. So on the one hand, why did he get his name? He got his name because the sun stopped for him. Now the sun stopping for him is perhaps, says the Maharal, the greatest sign of Birchas Hashem, of a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or the sun did not stop for him, but the sun shone through for him. You know that a big part of the whole picture, the whole structure that we speak about in the world, when we speak about connection to Hashem, Birchas Hashem, the idea is surpassing, somehow bypassing the sun. Bypassing the sun. Bypassing the system of the sun and the moon and the stars, the mazolos that stand in our wake. Again, let's look at this week's parsha. Yosef HaTzadik has two dreams. Right in last week's parsha, Yosef HaTzadik has two dreams. The first dream is about ma'almim alumim b'sei chasada, and the second dream is about right the bundles, the sheaves, right coming and bowing down to him. And the second dream is about the sun and the moon and the stars coming and bowing down to him. So everybody knows, right? The Ramban says that what's the idea? What's the pshat in the dream of the sheaves? Because when the 11 brothers of Yosef would come and bow down to him, what would they be bowing down to him for? They'd be down to him for grain, right? They'd be coming there because there's a famine in Eretz Canaan, and they went to Eretz Mitzrayim where the grain was to be found, which Yosef had masterfully, with the help of Hashem, stockpiled. So they came for sheaves. So that's the dream. What's the second dream? The sun and the moon and the stars come bow down to me. What's the symbolism of that?
No mazalos.
No
mazalos.
Okay. So the truth is that the Rishonim are awfully quiet about it. But the pshat, but that's the pshat. In other words, normally in the world, you understand that a great proportion of the world, historically, bow down to the sun and the moon and the stars. If you look in the Chumash, in the Torah, the chief Avodah Zarah competition was the Ra'isas HaShemesh V'Sayareach Kol Tzva HaShamayim V'Nidach Tov Yishtach Aviz Lem V'Avadatam. The sun and the moon and the stars. That was what all the nations of the world worshipped. Nowadays, you know, we've gotten more sophisticated. So what does most of the world bow down to instead?
Movie stars.
What does the world bow down to instead? Right? The replacement, really, of the sun and the moon and the stars is science. The replacement of the sun and moon and the star and the stars was the, quote-unquote, the ancients' direction that they pointed at when it came to science, because they knew that their life changed when the sun rose and it changed again when the sun set. They knew that it changed according to the seasons, which was the relative positioning of all of these things. And they had theories even about the stuff that we don't see so well, which was where we were relative to the stuff, you know, the Milky Way and the Big Dipper and who knows what else and all the other signs of the zodiac that are there. They saw these things literally as the world turns, that it ran their life. So this was the point of their deference. So you, when you see yourself, you know, as part of the course of the world and you're functioning within the box of nature, that's something. What was Yosef's ultimate revelation to his brothers after giving them lunch? What was the ultimate revelation of Yosef to his brothers when everybody came down and bowed out to him? It was, did you know something? This was all, you didn't send me here. Right? You think you're functioning within the box. This is all HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineering everything just so that we would be here in this position. Which is basically that the sun and the moon and the stars are bowing down to me. In other words, Yosef sees that instead of him being under the influence, subject to nature, it's the other way around. Everything that happens in nature happens instead because of us, because of Klal Yisrael. Hashemesh v'yareach v'arach hasar kachav mishtachim li, which is, of course, only a continuation or a fulfillment here in the original Yetzias Mitzrayim of what happened when Avram Avinu was first told about the whole thing. When Avram Avinu had the first covenant, which what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He took him outside and he said, look at the stars. What does that mean, he took him outside? So, simple pshat, previously, Avram and the Rabbeinu Shalom were sitting by the fireplace, right? They were sitting inside Avram Avinu's tent and they were schmoozing. Avram says, tell me how am I tell me about this, that, the other thing. So Hashem says, here, let's go out on the deck. And he points out, he points out to the stars. Say Chazal, no, was he took him out of the box of the universe. The box of the universe where you exist underneath the power of the stars, he took him outside of that. And he said, Ein Mazal Yisrael, the Jewish people are not subject to these things. They're not subject to whim. Their connection is directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not under anything of nature. So, and that's why we have, well, you know, we have that the biggest signs is, you know, when the sun's rotation changes, you know, for Yaakov Avinu, for Yahushua, you know, this is the ultimate show of strength, where even you see it in an instant, that the Jewish people aren't subject to these things. So Nachdimon Ben Gurion, the miracle which happened to him, by which he got his name, which was the manipulation of the very forces, the sun and the clouds and everything else, this is the sign of the greatest connection to Asha.
So with Yosef, is your point further illustrated in the second dream by the fact that Yosef himself isn't present, there's no
representation of him. It's Yosef himself, that's correct.
It's 11 stars, not 12, unlike the 12 sheaves.
Yeah. But it's clear, it's that revelation of Hashgacha, which is the second part. There's the food, which is the currency of their meeting, and then there's the meaning of their meeting, which Yosef shows, which is the Mishtach Avimli. Okay. So that's him. And that's the Eishir Shel Bracha. That's the wealth for the sake of Bracha. Now, the second piece, which he's going to talk about, is what was the asset which Nachdimon Ben Gurion had. Okay, so we'll get to that scheme, right? In other words, in making this scheme, he said, okay, there's three types of wealth. Nachdimon Ben Gurion is the personality of type A, and the stuff which he have, he's also going to have to explain that it's somehow type A. And the same with Ben Kalba Savua is going to be type B, and the wealth which he had was also going to be type B. So far we're just doing the second stage. Three types of wealth, now we have the three people. So Nachdimon is person one, that's the most famous event of his life, that's how he's named. Ben Kalba Savua is the second one. So what's Ben Kalba Savua? Ben Kalba Savua is a person comes in and they're hungry, and they leave and they're satisfied, they're taken care of. So that's a no-brainer, right? That's obviously the second quality of wealth, which is wealth as provision of needs, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving the person everything which he could possibly need. And Ben Kalba Savua, that's what he did in his own life. People came in, they were needy, and he used the wealth to provide for, to supply, to support the needs of others. That's Ben Kalba Savua. And the third one was Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, which what did Chazal describe? They don't describe any needs. They describe this man that on the one hand, when he would walk, the talis, you know, the tzitzis, which were schlepping behind, they went on a red carpet. Right, a red carpet is not a matter of wealth. A red carpet is, you roll out the red carpet, it's a matter of importance, of significance. His throne, his chair, sat amongst the thrones, the chairs, of the greats of Rome. He was chashuv. He was important. He was significant. In his case, we don't find that he had this wealth, and the wealth was for the purpose so much of provision. The wealth was to give him position rather than rather than provision. And that, those were the three kinds of wealthy people that we found there. One of them who just seemed to be in the path of Hashem's blessing with nothing in between. The second one who was the ultimate provided for and provider for others. And the third one who was chashuv. Very neat. Isn't that neat? Isn't that like really neat? Okay, so now we have to see, Lemaisa, they're all going to be in a position of provision. Right? Because right, this one is going to provide 21 years worth of this one's going to provide 21 years worth of that. They're all going to be providing. So if we're going to divide it up, and they're all in the realm of provision, we have to somehow see something about the specific materials which they are going to be providing. So now this is the third step of this quote-unquote trinity. Excuse the expression. One of them wanted to support them with food, right? That was the, who was the first one, right? So we say that that it was Nachdima Ben Gurion who was going to have the power to provide them with Eitzim. What's the idea? What's the wood? So it's because wood, we know wood is going to be growing the most. What does that mean? Well, first of all, we mentioned when we read the Gemara that they said, oh, in a certain sense, wood is the most important. Why? Well, they were Meshabech, they wanted the wood the most. Why? Because for one silo full of wheat, to process that, to make it, you'll need 60 silos full of wood. So wood is necessarily needed in abundance. Second of all, wood comes from trees. Right, everybody? Familiar, right? Wood comes from trees. Trees are the ones which are going to be showing, right? That's the biggest bracha. I mean, wheat, you know, you could have beautiful wheat fields that will extend as far as the eye can see, you know, out there in Kansas or Lahavdil someplace in Eretz Yisrael. But on the other hand, right, the wood is, okay, it's right here, it's just one thing, and it just can keep growing and growing and growing and getting thicker and getting taller and getting bigger. So in a certain sense, in that sense, it's going to also be symbolic of bracha. It's Zer Yere Simen Bracha Yoiser. And this is the thing which L'chachem Miuchasim L'bracha Me'akel. They're going to be connected to bracha more than anything else. Because bracha, the first thing about bracha is ribuy, is this growth. Right? You know that this is the Maral writes about this elsewhere. It's written in other form as well. Beis Reish Chaf. What?
Does he talk about the Aram? Inside and out is gold, but in the middle of it is wood, because that, being symbolic of a person, you have to toko kabaro. But in the meantime, the essence has to be wood because it's a source of growth.
And it's live.
It's alive.
It's alive. Right. Right. And the words, the letters of Baruch, right, are Beis Reish Chaf, 222, right? It's twos on all levels, because bracha is just this notion of increasing and increasing. And if wood is, you know, the live tree is the symbol of increasing, of bracha, you know, bracha me'es Hashem, so then that's what would be the symbolic resource, so to speak, of the person who's blessed with Birchas Hashem, which is the one, which is Nachdimon Ben Gurion, connected in that way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the Simen Bracha Yaiser B'davar Shiyesh B'Ribui, the thing which has the most growth, and to a certain degree which we need the most of all of these things, that's going to be the one of Bracha. So his wealth fit the type of wealth which he represented, the type of thing which he had, which was being in the path of Birchas Hashem. Asher Hasheni, the second one, was Ben Tzitzis HaKeses. And he was the one who had the Mishcha V'Chamra. The one of significance was the one who had the Mishcha and the Chamra, the oil and the wine. And he says that the idea is because these are the Dvarim Chashuvim B'Yaiser. These were the most significant things, right? Oil and wine. We're talking here, we're not talking the, you know, oil which is mined from the ground, which also, right, brings with it some significance. But you're talking here about oil of olive oil and things like that. And that, you know, the Gemara speaks many times about, you know, the wealthy, important people who would be constantly, you know, would have, you know, shemen for anointment and for bathing in and for pampering themselves. And in general, shemen is considered to be something very, very significant. It's a very, very significant item. Wine, certainly so. Wine we use so much specifically in order to lend chashivas, to lend significance. You make a bracha over wine because you want to lend the whole context a greater significance. So, therefore, it's understandable that together with the one whose wealth is not for utilitarian purposes, but to lend the aura of importance, so came along this type of a wealth as well. And then kalba savua, right? So that's going to be the natural one, which is, you know, the wheat, right? Bechitiu, sorry, wheat and barley. That's bread. You know, it's the basics of sustenance. So be there where the matter is the wealth of sustenance. So that was the person who had these three things. So says the Maral, those are the three dimensions of strength which people are given. The godly connection of bracha, which has certain specific representations in this world, which was Nakdimam Ben Gurion, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Poseach Es Yodecho Masbiel Cholchai Ratzon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just making sure that everybody's needs are taken care of, and in the wealthy person's case, that's seen to the hilt, that Hashem is taking care of the needs, you know, with plenty, and that was represented here, and the idea of giving a person a station and a position of his own, chashivus, and that was also taken care of here. And all of these three dimensions, even Yerushalayim, under siege, but it had for itself, it had built into it all of these three strengths. The channel of blessing was still alive, the significance was still alive, and the needs were still there, and they were going to be able to manage for that period of time. That's the first explanation of the Maral, and it's I find it a very, very elegant, typical elegant Maral structure of these three. The second approach, which he says, is again on this kind of a level. It's a little harder. It's a little less elaborate than the first. And I want to share with you to continue the picture which he draws. I found as well an explanation of these three wealthy people. This is on page Tzadiches, the second column. Hashem gave man three types of parnasa. One is kedei lefarnes ulahachyes nafshei. One is to sustain and to keep the person alive, to give the person his needs, which is bread. Right, lechem is right. So we say kilei al lechem levada yichya adam. Not by bread alone does man live, but bread is there to, you know, there's an alternative. You could have lechem in hashemayim, maitza pi Hashem, you know, but bread is there as the simple, material, mundane way of keeping a person alive. Bread as the basics, right? Before Dr. Atkins came along. Hasheni, the second one is haparnasa, shenosan le'afki ein tzarech le'. The second one is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be giving, right? And then here he's talking about not three types of wealth, but three types of parnasa. The second one is beyond the basic needs of keeping the person alive. Raklana osay ulatayvasay, to enjoy, to benefit, to have some, you know, some extras. And the person's not dependent on that. And that, he says, is represented by the oil and the wine. They're not necessities, they are luxuries. Right? So whereas, again, in the first interpretation, the bread thing was the same. Right? In the first interpretation, he was saying there's a wealth of providing for a person, for what the person needs, and bread is representative of what the person needs. But it would be, again, including both basics and extras. In the first interpretation, the wine was, it's not a need at all. It's just there as a status symbol, you know, in a positive sense. It shows a certain importance to the person. Here, he's saying it's not as a status thing. It's as an extra pleasure. You know, the perish which the Rishonim say on the bracha of Bayer Nefashes Rabbis, right? The bracha you make, the most basic after bracha. So we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bayer Nefashes Rabbis v'chesreinon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Nefashes v'chesreinon. What's chesreinon? Chesreinon is things without which you'd really be missing, you'd really be lacking basic needs. And then you say, Al kol ma shebarasa lachiyes b'em nefesh kol chai. Everything that you created. In other words, we thank Hashem not just for providing us with basics, but also giving us extras, giving us nice little extra pleasures. Right? Ice cream, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for also. In other words, it's not according to most opinions, a basic necessity of life. But nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it. That's the, huh?
It's my
clothes.
One of my basic food
groups. So that's the second thing. That's the second kind of provision. And that was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave. And the third, Ashlishi, and this is the most interesting one, and a difficult one to define. Something which isn't really something that you're going to benefit from at all. Do you enjoy the wood? You don't enjoy the wood. The wood is a hechitimsa. The wood is a tool. The wood is a tool that enables you to be able to produce something that ultimately you will enjoy. It's a hechsher. And the idea is, as he goes on to explain, that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world, really, not, I shouldn't say everything, but the basic things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world, he created them, and, you know, there's the name of Hashem of Shakai, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Omer Lo Lomidai, he sort of stopped the world. He could have kept going. He could have built his creation further. But he stopped it. And he stopped it and he said, okay, now I want you to take care of it. You should finish the job. The famous exchange between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus and the Roman, where Turnus Rufus said to Rabbi Akiva, I don't understand, if Hashem wanted people to be circumcised, why didn't he make him that way? And Rabbi Akiva argued back to him and he said, tell me something, do you eat bread? Right? Hashem just created the wheat, right? What do you do? How does it work? The idea is, he created the wheat and he says, I went this far, you now have the responsibility to take it the rest of the way. You have to be misakin, you have to fix. And the same way it's true with your breakfast, it's true with yourself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't create people perfect. He creates us very, very flawed. And the Bris Milah is a sign of the work that we have to do in order to make ourselves more complete. Because that's the idea. Asher bara Elohim, right, on the end of this of Shabbos, we say, his sin is, Asher bara Elohim l'asos. Hashem created, he rests from all the work which he created l'asos to do. What does that mean? What's that last word that we say always in Kiddush Friday night? What does that mean? He created to do. He created, he says, okay, now I'm finished. Now you need to do. I mean, there are different pshatim, but that's one of the basic pshatim. He created, now you have to take over. You have to finish the job. You might remember in Be'er HaGoel, we had a whole shiur about this. Subject to do with the fire of Matzah Shabbos, etc. So you have to take over. So the wood represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu not giving us, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us the tools to take care of ourselves. Parenthetically, you know, the Beis Halevi says a beautiful pshat. He says that's why when Hashem came to Avram Avinu by the Bris Mila, what did he say? He said, Ani Kel Shakai, Yisalech Lefanai Ve'yesamim. I am the God of Shakai. Go before me and make yourself perfect. Why did he introduce himself all of a sudden with the name Shakai? Because that's what Shakai means. Omer Lo Lamedai. He said, world stop. He could have continued. It could have been that the bread would have grown on trees. It could have been that everything would have been ready. But he said, no, stop here, you take over. And that's the introduction to the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the three things. He gave us our needs. He gave us extras. And he gave us tools to make all of these things into a reality. Those are the three things. And those were the three branches of the Parnassa that he gave through these three Ashirim, through these wealthy people. He does not explain how, you know, in this one, it's only one. You know, he goes from three types to three gifts. He doesn't explain the three people, you know, in the process of that, Nakdim and Ben Gurion, and he doesn't explain that part of it. But it's an additional meaningful interpretation. And then, I guess this is as far as we're going to get, just one last interpretation. And this last interpretation is what the Maharal introduces as Sayyid Divrei Chachamim. In other words, till now, it's been very elegant, but it's been very, you know, very logical. You don't have to be a mystic in order to appreciate these various divisions which the Maharal has been saying over here. The next one is going to be Sayyid Divrei Chachamim. And here, the Maharal is going to explain that these three brachos are corresponding, and these three wealthy people are corresponding to the three primary midos, which, you know, in different places are given different names, but the three primary midos, the three primary characteristics that exist, the midos of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the midos of Chesed, of Din, and of Rachamim. Okay, now rachamim, you're looking at me, you're saying, one second, I thought it was MS or something like that. So rachamim is a parallel which is used as the third. Sometimes rachamim is actually the third. For instance, one of the classic places where you have this, and Maral writes about this in several places, is Chazal tell us that the Jewish people have three midos. Shloisha midos yesh b'umazu. There are three specific characteristics of the Jewish people. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Goimlei Chasadim. Okay, so Goimlei Chasadim, people who do kindness, that's easy, right? That we got from Avram Avinu. How about Baishanim? Baishanim means people who have a certain modesty. And modesty means really an awareness of others. That's the Midah of Yitzchak. In fact, the Gemara says that where did we get the mitzvah, where do we know the Midah of Busha? That's from the Pasuk, which says that at Har Sinai, which of course is attributed to Yitzchak, because the shofar of Har Sinai was the shofar of Elei Shel Yitzchak, and we're taught that Shavuos, the Antiv of Pesach, is the Antiv of Avram, Shavuos is the Antiv of Yitzchak. It says, Bavur tiyeh yirasai al peneichem levilti techeto. His fear, the fear of Hashem, will be upon your faces. Says the Gemara, that's Busha. Right? That's Yira, that's Yitzchak, right? Yira Shamayim. Klal Yisrael, who stood and encountered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can't be brazen. When you've come face to face with the Almighty, so to speak, kivayochol, right? You know, there's going to be a certain humility, a modesty, a bashfulness that will be imprinted forever. So that we get from Yitzchak. And how about Rachmanim? Rachmanim is different than Gemlei Chasadim. Rachmanim is different than Gemlei Chasadim. So what Rachman means is really a very interesting sugya, and some of it is going to be touched upon here. But the classic way, which is really the way we're going to have it over here, is that Rachman is not chesed. Chesed is no basis, no starting point. In fact, the classic chesed is Hashem creating the world. Hashem didn't have Rachmanis to create the world. There was nothing to have Rachmanis on. There was nothing that existed. He created because he wanted to give. It's Gemilas Chasadim is Chesed Yesh Me'ayin, is something from nothing. Rachmim is, you see somebody who's hungry, but you know that they need something, so you want to meet their need. You want to take care of them. You want to fill the gap. Right? Compassion. Right? The difference, Chazal say to some degree, between Eiv and Avram Avinu. Eiv made sure that everybody, they needed something, they came to it. He had a tent with four doors, Eiv. Right, he had a tent with four doors, and people would come in, and he would know what they're used to eating, and he would make sure that they have it. Avram Avinu would come; they'd come to Avram's tent. He would say, "What do you usually have for dinner?" Right, they would say, "Macaroni and cheese." So he says, "Oh, I have some breast of chicken I want to give you tonight." What do you usually drink with your dinner? I usually have soda. I usually have water. You've got to taste this wine. He didn't try to address their needs. Tried to expand their horizons. He tried to give them things that they never had before, that they never tasted before. That's the difference between chesed and rachmim. And another part of it is that rachmim is, you know, din could say one thing, chesed could say another thing, right? It's too like din is strict, chesed is kindness. Rachmim is somehow where the two of them meet, where you ask for rachmim. That's why, I was explaining, that's why tefillah is called rachmim. Tefillah is called rachmim. Because tefillah has this notion. When you stand in tefillah before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, I deserve this. Right? It's a combination. It's rachmim. It's saying, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and whatever it is, there's some level of me standing here within tefillah avayda, but at the same time, you know, you're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the extra measure. It's difficult. It's a difficult thing to define exactly. But rachmim is therefore attributed to Yaakov Avinu, and it's a discussion, a broader discussion about what that is. That's where we get it from him. But he says like this. Rabbi Hartman brings this, and I tell this as a piece I have the most trouble with. He brings the Maral elsewhere. Maral Nesiva Avayda says, that's what we say when we bench. Hazon Esayelam Kulei Betuvai, Bechein, Bechesed, Urachamim. Right? So Chesed is Chesed. Rachmim, you got it, is Rachmim. Chein, what's Chein? Chein is Din. Why is Chein Din? Because Chein means because I'm worthy of grace. You know, there's some Chein that the person has. The person has done something to make himself, so to speak, graceful. and therefore deserving of some kind of thing. Whenever it says in the pasuk, "V'noach matza chen be'enei Hashem," Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem. Why did he find favor? Because he was a tzaddik, right? Ischarisi tzaddik v'fonai, but there is I seen you to be the most righteous one. So chen is generated. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. So that's what I struggle with. That's what I really have a hard time understanding, because exactly that question. V'eschanan el Hashem v'esahi leimar. So Chazal, there's so many midrashim where I'm trying to plead with Hashem. He says, "Oh, look." So Chazal says, "Look at tzaddikim. They have so much that they could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, come on, you know, I took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. I did it." But they only ask b'loshein chinam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do it for me for no reason. And Chazal go on and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has all these eitzres, all these storehouses from where he gives things to people. The biggest one, by far, is the one of matnas chinam, where he gives them something for nothing. So it's hard to wed the two of them. But basically, I think, I have the most trouble with it, but I think that the idea is that, yes, but it says, V'chanaisi es asher achayin. Hashem gives things for free. He is gracious, but he's gracious to those who generally find favor in his eyes. The one who finds favor in his eyes, how he says, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, please just do it for me. I'm not asking you based on something I have to bank on, but just give it to me. So it's hard to put those two together, but there's room to put those two together. So he says those are the three. There's chen, chesed, v'rachamim. People who really understand will understand this. It rules me out. But, right? So he says, that's one bracha mitzad ha-chesed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a chesed. Hasheni hu ha-oysher shu mitzad ha-din. So one is oysher of chesed, another one is mitzad ha-din, which comes from din. How does oysher come mitzad ha-din? So you're also, there's a lot to talk about. The thing that we would recall is that Vavorechecha, which is the bracha of wealth, right? Which it says in the pasuk is it's b'mamayin, that was connected to Yitzchak. By Yitzchak it says Yitzchak planted in that land and he found in that land Mea Sha'arim 100 times, whatever it was, Vayivarcheu Hashem, and Hashem blessed him. The term of bracha, as applied to wealth, was found by Yitzhak, which was din. And the relationship to that, I'm going to put on hold. We'll talk about it for a couple of minutes, right when we just finish the structure. And the third one is v'rachmin. And rachmin means that, you know, the world is there, and the world has its needs, and you want to just, you know, want to be compassionate for it and take care of it. So he says, tzivi wood is chesed. Why is it chesed? Because tzivi is rak l'tikun ha'echel. Here he calls back to what he spoke about in the last structure. The wood is not something that you benefit from directly. Right? It's really just a tool. So therefore, in a sense he argues, this is very, very subtle, that since you're not really getting something from it, so then it's like for nothing. It's a chesed. And then, on the other hand, you have chitius ari, which is din. Why? Because you need it. You can't survive without it. And on the other hand, mashcha v'chamra, he says, mashcha v'chamra is rachmim. So you have the person there, and look, you know, mitzad ha-din, they don't absolutely need it or deserve it. They can manage without it. They don't do mitzad ha-din. Rachmim gives them some kind of just an extra measure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu blends a little bit of the chesed with the din, and he gives it them. It's not meaningless, it's not useless, it's not based on nothing, but on the other hand, it's not based on pure need either. And that's sort of the bridge position. And that's what he says, Ein Safek, Kol Elu Dvarim Berurim, Ein Safek, L'misha Amad B'Sayt Tivashim. That's what the Ma'al considers the side of this issue. So I just want to take a couple of minutes just to conclude with this idea of the Aisher being the bracha. Aisha being the bracha. If you remember, earlier in Perek Hay, he spoke a little bit about this idea when we spoke about the fact that the menorah was on the south, which is the right side, and the shulchan is on the left. Right, the shulchan is on the left. And the shulchan, right, the right side represents strength, and the left represents growth. It represents growth. Why? Because number one, it's the second hand, right? I mean, the right hand is the first hand, the left is the second hand. And whenever you get to two, you get to bracha, right? Beis, reish, chaf, 222, you get to bracha. The shulchan is on the left because the shulchan is the bread, which is the bracha, shulchan malachim, the royal plenty, the success which comes. Bracha mitsuya b'isa, bracha is found in the bread. Now, why is that din? Why does that relate in any which way to din? So, the thing is that, Yitzchak, of course, was din. Yitzchak was the second, right? He was the second, right? And din is always seen as being more than one. Why? Now, the Maral says, elsewhere, he says that the name, what's the name of Hashem of Midas HaDin? Elohim. Elohim's in the plural, right? It's in the plural. Because din always takes on this form. Din is always, there's a winner, there's a loser, there's a zakai, there's a chayav, and there's a duality. And that's the world which we live in. That's why in the time when there's Midas HaDin, you have not Hashem Echad. You don't have Hashem one, so to speak. But we say, on that day, his name will be one. Because, you know, there are people who have good things, they can make atev ametiv, lo'aleinu, have bad things, they have to make a dayan ha'emes. There's this idea of a world that spreads out bays. The world was created. So, you know, that's the negative side of din. But inherent in that is this idea of branching out, of going from one to more than one. The world was created with a bays, right? Bereshis. The first letter, it wasn't created, but I'm saying the first letter of the Torah is Bereshis. Why? Because bracha, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going beyond himself. And at the same time, the world was also created with Elohim, with Midas HaDin. So these two things, which are, in a certain sense, you would see them as being opposites. Opposites of each other. Wealth, blessing on the one hand, and din, judgment, which is sort of, you know, very, very austere and limited on the other hand, but they find themselves into the same place. And it's a fascinating relationship, which, again, I can tell you the mechanics, these sort of technicalities, but it has to sit. It's something that has to be absorbed and understood. I'm always a little bit unsettled about it, to be honest. The relationship of these two qualities together, the bracha of great wealth, and at the same time, this aspect of din, but they do seem to correlate in many, many different ways. Rabbi Hartman brings as a sort of like a coup de grace on this matter. What do you call a wealthy person in Hebrew, Lashon Kodesh? What's the other word? A gvir. A gvir. Right? A gvir is from the term gvura, right? Which is, again, that's the Yitzchak term. Right? Gvura. Strength. Power that he's, like, so to speak, a control of others. But there's this correlation. So as the Maral, and the understanding of Said, that's one of the aspects of wealth, the wealth of din. I know that I'm not explaining this fully satisfactorily. Don't worry, it's only because I have no fully satisfactory personal processing of it, so therefore I'm only giving you what I have. Okay, Yetz Hashem. We will continue. Now, guys, we learned all the different kinds of wealth. Go out there. Go out there. Get them. What? Yeah.
What's up? God being on the back.
So what does that mean? Yeah.
So when you have two things and one thing on top of another, it's a Merkav. Two things in the mind.
I did.
Plurality, always
before I went to the shares, thank you. I'm coming home.
A mixture, an admixture.
If you want me to,
something
I can
on
go
top,
there now.
Piggybacked on top of another.
That's mean like Merkav.
What do you want?
From the word Rofe, something riding on top of something else. Something
do you want anything on it? Or just
so that's also implying Ribui.
Do you have cream
and
cheese?
And Rofe is also the same Reish Chav base.
Yeah.
Do you want to check?
I hear you're coming.
Good. Thank you.
You want to, all right, so I'll go there and get. Do you want me to get you a coffee?